gravy from the drippings and have it with mashed potatoes and the veggies and all the fixes.
Bill McKenzie talks about McKenzie hams.
Well, first off, they start with a quality fresh ham. It's trimmed, and the curing itself is an overnight process. From there, they go into the smokehouse, and then they, after they're cured in smoke, they go in, you know, they're packaged and put in a box to be shipped to the stores. Well, you should choose McKenzie ham because you certainly be have all your guests raving about the taste and the quality of the ham.
McKenzie, wherever fine meats are sold.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Gosh, you know, it's, you know, when I have to be educating an entertainer about how to use the headphones, good grief. Let's get right down to business. Joining us here live in our studios this morning is the logger, Rusty DeWeese. Good morning.
Mark, hey, I'm a stage guy.
No headphones.
I'm not a headphony guy. Yeah, it's always up in the air whether I'll use the cans when I tape things or not. I usually, because I'm used to hearing myself natural.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to use the cans, but it's been long many years we've been doing this.
But does it sound different to you when you're in headphones?
Yes, it does.
What does it sound like?
It sounds, I can't explain it. I mean, I'm hearing more things through the headphones. Here, I'm just hearing your voice and my voice.
Okay.
You know, and then
you're hearing other voices in the headphones?
No, he's going to play the music. And your voice is different, and my voice is different. You'd get used to it in 20 seconds.
Okay.
But, I mean, here, yeah. I'll put them on.
All right, I'm kidding.
See, now, is it working now? I have them on. Am I different?
How about me? Do I sound different?
Actually, no. I'm good now.
How about now?
I'm good. I don't want to mush my hair either.
If you'd like to join us on the program, you can at 244-1777. That's our local number in Central Vermont. You can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. Thank you for joining us on the program this morning. We will be talking with Rusty DeWeese. He is a great entertainer. He has some great shows that will be coming up right after Christmas, which we will encourage you to go to. We'll also check in with our White House crew to begin hour number two. There is a developing story out of Pakistan today that is just dreadful, a terrible kidnapping and shooting at a school by the Taliban. So we'll check in with our White House crew about that. Number of Vermont stories to get to as well today, too. Just a quick note, coming up on the program tomorrow, we will talk about solar energy. On Thursday, we'll talk about the Beatles, and on Friday, we'll be joined by the House Speaker, Shap Smith, to talk about property tax reform. Pretty wide variety.
Yeah.
So,
not sure I'll be tuning in Friday. I like Shap Smith, but...
You don't like property taxes?
I don't like them, but I just don't... Yeah, the reform, the minutia of the details of that subject... Maybe I'll tune in.
I relish it. I just relish
Do you?
It, yeah. Can we talk about one political thing here before talk about the funny stuff? Because earlier this year you were actually talking about this idea of running for Congress.
Yeah.
So you have any regrets about not having done that?
Well, no, because the decision not to. I was flirting heavily with the thought of perhaps doing it. So, no. No, because you don't. You don't look back and say, oh, boy, it would have been a good time to run. You run for office if you have the love for it or the need inside you. And but I found that I didn't have that. At this point, I'd like to go on the record saying, at this point, passion, you know, that's what I'm looking for, because that's a train to get on that isn't going to stop if you put your foot down and drag it. So if you get on that, you want to have some investment in there. And I didn't have that emotionally and time. You know what? I will say to a business, would you like to advertise on my shows? They say, what's that mean? Well, if you give me X amount of money, I'll put your banner up in the lobby. I'll talk about you for a minute on the stage. I'll mention you three more times on stage. You'll be on the posters. And for that money, this is what you're getting. I thought it was going to be difficult for me to say, would you give me money?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do, I might win, and then I might be able to make this happen. Now, I'm not guaranteeing you are going to, that you'll laugh at my show, but I'm pretty sure you will. And also, I don't have, you know, it's not a big deal. You're paying me, the customer's paying $25. So if they leave, and by the way, if you go to the show, I'm like darn tough socks. If you go to the show and I see you after and you say, man, you weren't funny, I didn't like you, didn't like the whole thing, I'll say,
money back.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, asking for money to run a campaign would have been rough for me. It was rough for Milne, too. He only came up with 90K. But he
almost won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost.
Speaking of flirting, what's with the chocolate?
I go to Laughing Moon Chocolates every day and get a piece of almond bar. And I've been doing it for years. And then it comes out in the news that dark chocolate's good for you and almonds are good for you. So see that? I'm ahead of my time.
Every day you do this?
Almost every day. Well, so much so that my mother, for my birthday, gave me a gift certificate to there.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So anyway, I said, man, I know you like that sweet stuff.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
That's and I know nice you have idea. A wife and a daughter, so.
Okay. You think maybe they'll get any of that, or just for me?
Well, I think they will, because I know that you've held them way up there. By the way, I bring those. Hey, full disclosure. Talk about being political. It ain't going to hurt that I bring my host's stuff.
Okay.
Who are you going to remember?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
The chocolate.
You're going to remember the
bee? Rusty, the chocolate guy.
You're going to remember the beekeeper from Putney who came up here late? No, well, man, I was ahead of time 20 minutes.
Well, they
I hugged Kaya.
Okay.
She and I go back 40 years, and I brought you chocolates.
You talk to anybody else down there?
The woman with the curly hair, pleasant as can be, I don't know her name.
Uh-huh.
And then the boss said he wants my number.
Okay.
So that's good.
That is good. That's always
it's
good.
It's all about relationships, man.
Get him chocolate, too. That's a good move.
Yeah.
For our listeners that have no clue about what you do, who is the logger?
You can say that he's a mix between Larry, entertainment-wise, he's a mix between Larry the Cable Guy and Garrison Keillor. Because I don't do so much at this show. I won't do so much. I do stories. I don't do just the Larry the Cable Guy punch, 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 joke, 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 joke. I still think Larry the Cable Guy uses some vulgar words, vulgar meaning we know which ones those are.
Yeah.
I don't. I do SC, some cussing. So it's some story-ish type things and some stand-up-y type things. Not stand-up in the traditional, I hold a mic and do quick jokes, but so it's a mix between there and now. The character I play on stage is me. It's all coming out of me. It's my thoughts, but I form it into a working class body and mind up there, because when I started writing stuff by accident, just because I started writing stuff, not because I had a goal to write a show and charge people to come see it, when I started writing things, what came out of me were those type of stories. I was interested more in the working class, meaning, let's say, the concrete worker, the truck driver, this woman who sews all day, or the man who sews all day, the working class mind and how they think and feel and what their days are like. Not that I'm not interested in the brain surgeon's life, but.
Mm-hmm. If you have any questions or comments, you can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. We're talking with Rusty DeWeese. He is the logger. Show's coming up after Christmas. We'll tell you all about those. Did the logger develop over time?
Yeah, and by the way, there's also a lot. Yeah, well, one of the developments is music. I'm a drummer. So when I started, Don Como would play the fiddle three tunes at the beginning and three tunes in the middle. And then, by God, my father went in a nursing home. I picked up a guitar and said, I'm going to go in there and play three chords for him. I played three chords until I got pretty good at it. And then I'd go over to Don's house, and we'd play. And we'd say, you know, I said, Don, one of these days, I'll even play on stage with you. Started with him. And now Don isn't playing with me anymore. Patrick Ross, who's fantastic, out of Newbury, young fiddle player, plays. Because Don's got four grandkids. And four kids, so Patrick Ross is playing. So now there's a lot of music in the show. And Peter Wilder from Morrisville, big Emmy Award-winning guy, he plays. So there's a lot of music in these upcoming shows. That's one development of The Logger. When I started, The Logger had an arc. It was a two-act play. The character, The Logger, even went to New York City during that play.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't break the fourth wall. Folks know out there know what the fourth wall is. If you see Death of a Salesman, Willie Loman is not going to turn from his wife and look at the audience and deliver a line. That's breaking the fourth wall. I didn't the first shows. Now I do. And now I do have a whole tank of not one-liners, but four-liners, because I started getting calls for company parties. They say, Russ, would you, they wouldn't say it like that. They say, Russ, would you entertain at our company party? I say, yes, Mr. Tarrant, I would. And well, I'll do that for an hour. Well, an hour of stories, I was thinking in a story that's 12 minutes, these Lake Wobegon type stories or Marshall Dodgy type stories or Rusty DeWeezy type stories, you would get 23 jokes and three of them are real big.
Uh-huh.
That's 12 minutes. Now, if you go to a company party, they might be wanting more jokes per hour. So I then started writing,
JPM.
More.
JPM. Yeah, jokes per minute.
Jokes
yeah.
per minute. More jokes per minute. So there's the two developments. Is there's more jokes per minute. I can do the old stories still, and I can mix them, and then there's a lot more music. And I break the fourth wall and do a lot of ad-libbing with the audience. When I rent a theater, which, by the way, I rent these theaters, they don't produce me, I ask the light person to keep the house lights up to 60-65% so I can see the audience people. I can see if someone's texting. I can see if someone's yawning. Mm-hmm. If I want to, I'll bust on them.
Yeah, that's always fun, busting on the people that are not paying attention.
Yeah, it is.
You like interacting with the audience?
I do very much. I'm telling you, a lot of times you'll do. I have to watch. I don't want a show to run too long. I think that's important. So I have to watch. I could literally at this point go on stage and just start talking and not do any material. And it's a lot of times the organic ad libs are fantastic. The material's fantastic too. But you'll see someone after a show or on the street after, and they'll say, oh, you really liked the show. You remember when you were talking to that girl out there? That was the funniest part. The extemporaneous thing is often, I'm not saying it's more funny than the material, but it's a different feel. So I do love it. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a better idea to go out with preparation, though.
I can't agree with you more. Preparation is the key to entertaining, I think, for me. Yeah.
What are the stories that you try to tell? We have to do this at the same time, by the way.
Oh. Cough drop. What are the stories? Well, they've changed. I have a new story I'm working on that's about a man who finally gets divorced. And he was Stanley, and when he was married, you find out why he married this person years and years ago. And he was very quiet. Then he gets divorced, and he opens up. And there's a lot of that around.
Wow. Why'd you want to tell that story?
Because it's about how we're living, how each of us is living our life, and how there are things that we're doing. We know what's right, but we don't always listen to ourselves. A three-year-old knows what's right. You say, don't go to the cookie jar, just little three-year-old Steve. And if he decides to, he sneaks. If a three-year-old kid knows what's right, we do. But why don't we do what's right in the first place? Whoa, there's a million answers to that. So I try to tell this story to at least say, this guy in this story finally did what's right. It wasn't too late. And look what happened to him when he did what was right for him. He flourished. So there's a story there. I talk a little bit now about politics. I have Mr. Shumlin's in there a little bit. Nothing that's degrading about him or anything, just things that people, you know, notes that people, when their ear hears them, everyone knows them. I talk about now I'm 54. I have some prostate humor. Always good, you know.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Always, prostate humor is always good. And then now in the Stowe show, I'm doing it at the Stowe Town Hall. We're doing it, Peter, Patrick, and I. And that's where I first did the lager at the Stowe Town Hall. And I've written a narrative that talks about a little kid that grows up in a town and ends up doing a show in his town. And then 18 years later, he comes back and does the show in the same hall. And that's the first hall I ever performed in front of anyone when I was 11 years old as a drummer. Our school had a recital up there. And my music teacher picked my name out of the hat, and I had the drum in front of people on this table. So I haven't gone very far, you know. So this show is about how we progress in our lives and how we start something. And also, in this show. There's a little bit, you know, when you grow up in Stowe, you live in Stowe, or even around in Waterbury, there's always that, oh, the mountain company doesn't like us. They just want to get rich people up there, you know, and that may be true. But it may not be true. Maybe the mountain company does do things for the... Maybe last week, Sunday, I sat in with the Army Band, the 40th Army Band, and we did a concert right up at Spruce Camp, and it was free, 2 o'clock. I know that the Stowe High School kids and elementary school kids every Friday still ski for free.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Friday program, and one of the weekend days they ski for free too. Anyway, but I talk about that. James Taylor is playing up at the Spruce Peak Center for the Arts this New Year's Eve. I played there last New Year's Eve.
Wow.
My ticket was $25 to $35. His are $200 to $1,000. I have a little jokes about that in the show coming up, this Christmas show. So there's all sorts of things in the show. And it's all about we're all the same is the bottom line. What I want to get across as the logger being on stage is, look, we're faulty and we're beautiful, but we are one, period. I don't care. You know, there's no exceptions. And that's what I try to get across with the logger. So everybody gets touched on. Who gets picked on more than anyone? Me. So.
Well, we're all equal, except some people get 10 times as much for tickets as other people.
Yeah, but if I wanted to do that, I could work towards that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Think you'd have as big a crowd as James Taylor?
Well, yeah. I'm going to sell more tickets than James Taylor is this week. Because he can only fill, what, 440 in that place?
So
the gross is going to be less, but it may go further. I tell people, look, it's a benefit for James Taylor. The money's going to the Spruce Peak Center for the Arts. Whose parent company is? AIG. But anyway, I tell the people to come to my show. It's $25. First of all, I saved you $975. Second of all, your $25 is going to a good cause, too. Me.
So is there, to be serious here, is there some sort of morals you're trying to get into? A moral you're trying to get into your stories? This whole thing about how we're all equal? Or is that too heavy?
Is that the moral to this comedy show you just came to for 2 hours is... No. I'm not trying to make anyone feel anything. I'm trying to say what I feel. Yeah. I'm betting, and I'm working hard, that during the music, your toe's going to tap, and during the comedy, you're going to laugh. I'm working hard for that. But you don't need to leave there going, oh, my Lord, I didn't realize that, we should treat each other well, and, you know, Republicans and Democrats on the bottom baseline are all the same. No. No. I kind of like say, here's what I think life looks like, and you could find yourself in here, in this, when you're looking up here. You might find yourself in here. One of the places you might find yourself is in a good place. You might also recognize yourself in a bad place here. But, I have a line in my show. I say, you wouldn't worry about what people thought of you if you actually knew how seldom they did.
Yeah, that's true.
There's all that stuff in there. So, no, I'm not trying to sway anybody's minds and thoughts and how they should treat anyone, but how I'd like to treat people maybe is what I'm trying to get across. I'd like to treat people well. I'd like to be able to treat you well, and I don't always treat you well.
So I won't turn to my daughter and say, you know, there's a little logger in all of us?
You could say that.
All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to break into the candy here. We're talking with Rusty DeWeese, the logger. Let me tell you when his shows are. They're coming up starting on Friday, the day after Christmas, the 26th. He's going to be at the Stowe Town Hall, as you heard him mention, where he had his first performance, proving you can go home again.
Yes, you can.
Saturday and on Sunday and then again on Wednesday. And the showtime, 7:30 on Friday, 7:30 on Saturday. Ironic, 7:30 on Sunday, too.
Yeah.
And then Wednesday, there will be two shows on New Year's Eve, 7 and 10. And that's all at the Stowe Town Hall. You get tickets.
Boy, a lot of places. Shaw's General Store, across from the Stowe Town Hall. Stowe Kitchen, Bath, and Linens, who are also an advertiser, a sponsor. That's a great place. I buy my towels there. And then you can go online, thelogger.com, through PayPal. You can call 802-888-8838 and reserve, or you can come to the door, but
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, continue our discussion. If you'd like to join us, you can at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Back after this.
Folks, Dan Keen here, urging you to charge into Lamoille Valley Ford during the countdown to 2800. First, I want to thank my good friend and former owner of the Rusty Nail in Stowe, Bobby Roberts, for just getting his new F-150 at Lamoille Valley. We delivered 2,689 vehicles during the countdown to 2800, but we've got a ways to go. From now through year's end, buy or lease any new car or SUV in stock at Lamoille Valley Ford and get a $1,000 gas card or discount of equal value. And truck buyers, listen to this. We're doubling your gas card to $2,000 towards any F-Series truck in stock. Right now at Lamoille Valley Ford, we're making crazy deals on every vehicle in our inventory to hit our goal, including the largest selection of F-Series trucks in Vermont. So drive Route 14, 15, or 16 to Hardwick and come get yourself a great deal plus a $1,000 or $2,000 gas card during the countdown to 2800 right now at Lamoille Valley Ford. And remember, at Lamoille Valley Ford, we know price matters.
Do you have super sensory skills?
Are you a flavor enthusiast?
If so, the Keurig Green Mountain Sensory Test Center wants to hear from you.
We are looking for consumer panelists to test a variety of food and beverage products from Green Mountain Coffee and other brands.
This would be a periodic and ongoing opportunity at our test facility in Waterbury Center.
No experience necessary.
Plus, for every 30-minute session you attend, we'll give you an Amazon gift card.
Just for giving us your opinions.
How sweet is that?
Want to learn more?
Give us a shout at 802-882-2703.
G-Stone Motors website ad, take one.
Hey, I'm Travis Romano from G-Stone Motors in Middlebury. We'd like to invite everyone to check out our web.
Hey, Travis, I just got a text message from my daughter.
Yeah, I heard.
What does TTYL mean?
Oh, are you still trying to figure out that phone? It means talk to you later, as in after we finish this ad.
How do you know all this stuff?
Did you download our new web app yet?
Web app? I mean, I can see the whole inventory from this phone?
Yeah, you can see our entire inventory right on your cell phone.
Cool. Did you know I could play Angry Birds on my phone?
Oh, never mind.
G-Stone Motors website ad, take two.
Hey, I'm Travis Romano from G-Stone Motors in Middlebury.
Excuse me, Travis, do you know what WTAIT means?
No, but I know what WTF means. What is it this time?
We'll take anything in trade. How's that?
All right, give me the tag.
G-Stone Motors, your hometown Ford and GMC dealer where they take anything in trade. Route 7 in Middlebury or online at gstonemotors.com.
Wow, look at all this new stuff at Bob's Camera and Video.
Oh, I want one of those waterproof power banks to charge my phone and my tablet.
I'm going to get a case for my 10-inch Android tablet. And look at this, a keyboard to use with my tablet.
Folio cases for tablets and iPads, all kinds of chargers.
And of course, Bob's always has the latest in digital and film photography. Top names in cameras, gadgets, accessories, and even film.
This holiday season, you need to make at least one visit to Bob's Camera and Video on Main Street in Barrie, everybody's hometown.
Hi everyone, this is Chris Davis from Twin City Subaru. Last year we partnered with the Vermont Food Bank during Subaru's annual Share the Love event. During that event, every new car sold raised $250 for the Vermont Food Bank, providing over 50,000 meals to Vermont families in need.
I'm Judy from the Vermont Food Bank. This year our goal is $25,000 and will provide 75,000 meals for Vermont families. With your help, we can reach that goal. 100% of funds raised for the food bank stay here and help our neighbors, friends, coworkers, and families in need. Each year, the Vermont Food Bank serves 153,000 Vermonters in need, including 34,000 Vermont children. Together, we can make a difference.
Visit our website at TwinCitySubaru.com for more details. Come on, Vermont, we can raise the bar and meet that goal. Please help the Vermont Food Bank and Twin City Subaru Share the Love event. Help reach our goal, because no child should go to bed hungry in Vermont.
All right, we're back. Continue our discussion. We've been talking this morning with Rusty DeWeese. He is the logger. His shows are going to be coming up starting right the day after Christmas. We'd love to have you join us on the program at 244-1777. That's our local number in Central Vermont. Toll-free 877-291-8255. Wow, we're getting a little deep there during the commercial.
Let's go deeper. Yeah. I'll say about the shows, you don't get just Rusty DeWeese, who grew up in Stowe. You get Patrick Ross, who's from Canaan, a fifth-generation fiddler. His father passed away and at 12 years, when he was 12 years old, he picked up his father's fiddle basically and went from these. He's played, studied with Mark O'Connor. This guy's unbelievable. You have Peter Wilder, who does work for Microsoft and Disney. He is a 5-time Emmy Award winner for music production. And he's been playing since he was 12 years old, a guitar. I'm telling you, you want to sound good.
Who needs you?
Well, the smart, have I done some stupid things? Yes. Have I done some good things? Yes. Have I done one smart thing? Yes. That is putting two guys like that, you know, getting in the middle of those two guys. I sound halfway decent.
Yep.
Yeah, but the music is absolutely fantastic in this show. I'm telling you. Yeah. So.
Let's talk about your father. You just mentioned his dad passing away. The last time, in fact, you and I spoke, you had just written your book, kind of an autobiography, some ruminations. Mm-hmm. Is that a
short
way to describe it?
Short stories. Right. Yeah, my thoughts.
And you wrote a lot about your dad passing away, which is not really what you would expect from somebody who's kind of a comedic entertainer.
The book is funny in parts, but there's a lot of serious stories in the book. There's also no cussing in the two books. I have two books, but scrawlings and scrawlings too. I got asked to write a column by Denton Publications over across the lake in Elizabethtown, New York. And at that time, my father was 50 when I was born. So at that time, my dad was beginning to die. And by that, I mean he spent 13 months in the nursing home. Just coincided with the start of writing a column, which I didn't know how to do.
Right.
So I'd go, when you go visit your father in the nursing home, and all of a sudden, he used to be Superman, now he, you know, I have a joke in the show. We have some nursing home humor in the show, by the way, you know, is being fed by really cute LNAs, sherbet. I tell you what, you want to fall in love. Watch LNAs feed your dad sherbet. Anyway, this stuff comes out of you. It just came out of me. Mm-hmm. So the first 8 stories in my show, in my book, was about my father. And I liked. You know, he was. I had a charmed life. He was my man, and my mother's my man, but she's my mother.
Your dad was a Greyhound bus driver.
He was a Greyhound bus driver for 35 years. You know, Rush, you got to get a job. Get a uniform job. Get a job with a pension. You know, hauling people. It's important cargo. You know, you got to be on time. You know, it's the easy stuff. You know, I tell you, he grew up on a farm. So he was 60, 65, 70. He'd be out playing. He'd plant trees. I remember we'd be out playing. I'd be watching him. He'd kick that dirt down in that tree hard. Everything he did with power and passion. Even when he's in a nursing home, he'd grab onto his arm. You know, and then he'd stop. And my mother would bring out a glass of water. I remember his hands were all muddy in those thermosy type glasses. And you'd see the mud dripping down from the coldness of the... And he'd drink 2 glasses of water. He was hydrating before hydrating was chic. You know, all those basic things, simple. How long did it take me to clean out his bureau after he died? 7 minutes. You know? I've had a charmed life. I've had good. People say, well, what do you think the key is to the parenting thing? I say, I don't know. I don't have kids, but I tell you what, here it is in a nutshell. I did plays. I did played basketball. I played music. All these things growing up, and when the rehearsal or practice was over at 4 o'clock, and I walked out of that school in the snowing, there they were. Every stinking time, man. Period. It isn't brain surgery, man. You don't have to be a genius parent. You don't have to make $1 million. You just got to be. And they were there. That's it.
Let's go to Stowe. Paul, good morning.
Hello.
How's it going?
Oh, hey, this is Heath.
Oh, I'm sorry. Heath, good morning.
How you doing, Mark? It's Heath from Stowe. How you doing, Rusty?
Good, man. You?
Good, man. I just want to say thanks again for helping Ames with that history project that you helped out with there a couple of years ago. And there's a story in there as well. But, you know, one of those things we talked about in the gym, I wanted to ask you about when you go into like a private party, for instance, to help out someone at the birthday party or whatever, and, you know, you offer your services in many different ways. I at one point we talked about how, you know, how far can you take the sarcasm or talking about a person when you're kind of roasting them And you can almost feel like the room getting uncomfortable. And you have kind of a sense of when you got to pull back or how you hang that drama in the air for a while. It's really quite effective and fascinating to watch in person. And I just want to say hi and hope you all are doing well.
Before you answer that
question, thanks, Heath.
Is what you guys talk about in the gym stay in the gym, or is this okay?
If the gym is in Las Vegas, yes, it stays there. No, the one in Stowe, man. No, everything's just blurted out everywhere. Yeah, Heath has a video production business up in Stowe.
I know, he did a big movie about Howard Dean.
Yeah, he did. He did. I got a cough, man. Would you push your button down?
Yeah, here we go. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
1, 2, 3, go.
Okay, good.
A couple of answers to that question. First of all, the people who are feeling uncomfortable in a room are never the people who the joke is about. If you're joking about, if Mr. Shumlin was in the audience, literally, this is true, and I was doing the joke that has him in there, he'd be laughing. The people around him, be all nervous. If you're joking about people who may have an extra pound or 17 or 70, they're laughing. The skinny people aren't. So I hate to say a comedian wants to make people feel uncomfortable, because that's not what I want people to do. That's the last thing I want to do, is to make people feel uncomfortable. But I have some little pricklies going through them, maybe. Yeah. Oh, but what Heath brought up is that is when you're jazzing. People say, are you tired of it yet? No, man. Because you're up there, and if there's 300 people, I mean, you're reaching with that microphone. You're aware of however many people listen to you. You're sort of aware of reaching every one of them personally. And that's why you're up at 3 in the morning thinking about things, I'm sure.
That's why I'm buying a lot of chocolate.
A lot of chocolate. So, yeah, I have to reach each one of those people to bring it to the edge, to know when to stop. Those are things, hopefully, that come naturally. And why do they come naturally? Because the first time I stood on stage, I was 3, and it was in Philadelphia, and it was during the church Christmas concert, and I had one line, and I wouldn't say it. And I wouldn't say it again. And the teacher came up and told it to me, something about the angels or something. I wouldn't say it. And you know what? People laughed when I didn't say it. The power of silence is the best thing you can do on stage. One of the most effective things is nothing. Do nothing. So same thing on screen. If I stand there, you have to have something going on inside you, mind you. If something's going on inside you, that lens picks up what's going on inside you. The lens is a, unbelievable tool. So it's to stand on stage and say nothing. But that's very difficult to do for some people. There's where the talent comes in. Not everyone, you say, read this line. I love you, Susie. I love you, Susie. You hear that? But when you tell Susie you love her in real life, it's coming from here. So it's basically, I love you, Susie.
Or your voice would crack.
So, yeah, that's the fun thing, feeling it on stage, when to stop, when not to stop, when to go, and hopefully it comes naturally. It only comes naturally, though, because you've been doing it since you were 3, and now you're 54.
But have you been in an office party where you've blown it, you've taken it too far?
2 times I can remember where I was.
Oh, God, tell us.
No, there were big events, company party-type things, and it just wasn't the right match. That's twice, though. That's like, you might as well say
what
zero.
Happened? What happened?
Just didn't feel it. I didn't feel it, and I didn't feel the people were feeling it. Now, I could go up to each one of those. Maybe there's 175 in the room each time. People and say, did you like that? Some of them would go, man, that was the best thing ever. Because you don't want to stand on stage and see someone down there looking up at you with a sourpuss face for 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
You don't want to stand up there and look at that person and go, uh-oh, they hate me. It affects you. Because more often than not, you'll get off stage and that person will come up to you with that same sourpuss face, shake your hand and go, my father died 4 months ago and I haven't felt or laughed as much as I have at this thing right here. You cannot judge what people are thinking. But I'm not saying some of the people at those 2 events might say, oh, no, that was good. I just didn't feel it. Very rarely do I feel like it doesn't go well. And one of the reasons is because now I have a whole bin full of things I know that will go well. And when you write new material, you put those in there and you place those in there sporadically so that if that starts to bomb, you go. You go to back to the home run.
And then there's always silence.
There's always, I tell you, you know what I did last night? I know you got a caller, but a group called me, emailed me 3 years ago, said we meet once a month in St. Albans, and we're the solo group. What's that mean? They said it means that we are someone who has lost a close loved one recently, and it's a meditative group.
Wow.
So they said, would you come up? We don't have any money, you know. I said, sure.
Tough crowd.
So I popped into a restaurant. Yeah, right. And so I thought, oh, it's going to be like, you know, people who have, you know, they're over it, you know, and they're just getting together. No. No. There were people that it was fresh. Well, why else would they have been going to this group? But I got them. And then on the way back before I was home, on the road while driving, I checked my emails. And I had an email from the head woman. She said, this woman, Cecile, she just broken up. She just sent me this email. And it was an email that's one of those emails that's, yeah. You know, blah, blah. I don't care what you do. If you're the lunch lady, you get an email from a mother that says, you've been feeding my kid. It makes you feel, okay, good. And so I did them last night in St. Albans. They called me back, said, would you come up there? It's a room for 35 people. Most of them were probably between 50 and 70. There's a couple that younger, a couple older. And you go in there, it's a Chinese restaurant. And I bring my guitar in there and just go. And it's lovely. And I was playing a song. And out on the sidewalk, I see a guy walking by out of the corner of my eye. And I'm playing the song. These people are watching me. I'm thinking, if he comes in the restaurant, that's comedy gold, man. Because I'm going to pick on this guy. So he walks in. Right in the middle of the song, I stop, I look around, and I went off on the guy. And the people were going nuts. And then I explained to the group what I was thinking. I said, you saw me playing the song and singing. You thought I was concentrating on the song. No, when I saw him, I was already thinking about what I was saying. So that's the job.
Right, yeah. Right. And was he cool about it?
He was clueless, yeah.
Okay.
So he was, in fact, I've hired him to come with me every every gig I do. He's going to walk by.
He's the walk-by guy.
He was great. He didn't say a word, man. He went, he stayed for 7 minutes, and he left. I hit him on the way out, too, man. Hey, Pete's working, you know what I mean?
Coming and going. Let's go to Barry. Pete, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I wanted to ask Rusty, some years ago, I saw him on a episode of Law & Order.
Yeah, man.
And I was just kind of curious how his acting career is going. I hear a lot of advertisements for his comedy, but I was curious about his acting.
Thank you, Pete.
I'll get off the phone and listen on air.
You died in that show, didn't you?
I died in that. Pete's getting off the phone, he's listening on air, and afterwards, at 11, he's going to call 802-888-8838 and reserve tickets to my show. Real quick on the first part of that, Pete, is I was in New York acting. I was in a movie, Black Dog. I'd been working on all sorts of shows. I did 2 Law and Orders, actually, and TV shows and 30 national commercials. I was hitting it. I got to the point where I had a quote in movies. That means when you get hired for a movie part, they don't say to you, we're hiring you, we're paying you SAG minimum, which is $2,000 a week or something. You get per diem. I had a quote, which means the
you
producer
can say what you want.
Producer says to your agent, what's his quote? Yeah, you could say $125,000 a week. And they'd say, well, no, we didn't, you know, you could say so. I was just at the point where I had a quote. And I wrote the second act of the first logger on the set in Georgia. And I came up and I did the logger, and that took off, and I saw that it had some legs, and that's a whole other story. But I, after about a year and a half, I made my first video, and things were going very, very well. I made 1,000 of them, and I said, I'm going to sell 1,000 by Christmas, and I sold 12,000 by that Christmas.
Oh, my gosh.
Called up my boss in New York because I had a regular job, Kathy Doyle, who ran William Doyle Galleries. I was William Doyle's assistant, and William Doyle died. Anyway, Kathy said, first of all, Rusty, we want you to know if you ever want to come back. I said, yeah, Kathy, I think I'm going to put all my eggs into this basket up here. She said, if you ever want to come back to New York, work for us, you have a job, open door. So it's relationships is what it is, you know. So Pete, at that point, I chose all logger all the time, very little or no New York City industry acting. And I say very little or no because once I moved back here in 2000, a couple of agents every once in a while couldn't find somebody they liked, and a couple of casting directors. And they'd call my agent and say, is Rusty Ruiz around? They say, no, he's in Vermont. But could you call him? Because we're looking for somebody that he might be something he might be right for. And I would go down and do a couple of gigs. But so I went full bore logger, and I think it was the right choice, first of all, because this is where I love. This is where the people are that I love.
So it wasn't that Bill Doyle.
It wasn't Bill Doyle, the politician. It was William Doyle, William J. Doyle, who owned an auction house, and I was his assistant for the first 6 years. The other part of that is, Law & Order. I did two Law & Orders. That was a great show to be on.
So what was your character? What happened to you?
First one was Leon Tripp. I had kidnapped a woman, Amanda Peet, who went on to be a huge, big star.
Wow, yeah.
It was a Patty. You know the way they always shadow real events?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So my Leon Tripp thing was a
Patty. Ripped from the headlines.
It was a Patty Hearst thing. I kidnapped this girl. We were running around killing people, and she liked it.
And she was with the Siamese Liberation Army.
Right. But I got killed by a storekeeper in a bodega. I got shot in the back in that one. I worked with, oh, my God, why can't I think of his name? He plays Lenny. Jerry Orbach.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
So here's a New York, do you want a New York story?
Legend.
So I got my first gig on Law & Order. It's Benjamin Bratt, Sam Waterston, Jerry Orbach.
Wow.
If people don't know who Jerry Orbach is. You'd know him if they saw him.
Yeah.
But he was
Heavy face. Yeah. Heavy face.
I think Crimes and Misdemeanors, Woody Allen. Try to remember the Dirty Dancing's father. You know, the Fantastics.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
42nd, a Chorus Line. He's a hoofer. But we know him now more as an actor. Anyway, we have a walk-away lunch. We're in Alphabet City. In New York City, we have a walk away lunch. Means they don't feed you, you walk away. So I picked this. I see everybody going into this Italian joint. I walk in. The actors, Lenny, Benjamin Bratt, Sam Waterston, they're sitting at this table. People say, what are those stars like? Okay. So I go and sit on a table on the side, and I order my whatever. And then Jerry Orbach looks over, and he goes, hey, Rusty. He says, come on over, sit with us, you know. And I'm green. You got to understand. You see me on stage now. I know my lines. I say them. But I'm a Stowe kid. I don't know from Law & Order and TV. So I go over. He says, hey, yeah, this place is great. We love this joint. We always come down here. He says, did you order? I said, yeah. He says, well, here, have some of mine until you wait, while you're waiting. Come on here.
Wow.
So that was number one. So I'm like, Jerry Orbach. Now, that's the first time. Now, I booked that show like 2 years later. I'm walking down the hall. I think it was over on the, I forget what they call it now, over on the west side. The studio's over there. And I walk into down the halls, and Benjamin Bratt's coming down. And he gets close to me. Hey, Rusty, how you doing?
Yeah. Pretty good.
It's Benjamin. It's a family there. And I think they're such a family that they prompt these people, say, hey, that guy Rusty, remember the guy, he's going to play in here. They look at the call sheet, and they get your number, and right. They put it together. That helps. They want the part-time actors, the co-stars, to be comfortable. The more comfortable us one-timer, you know, 5-6 lines people are, the better their show is going to be. They're not out there trying to show you that they've done Woody Allen movies and things. So Law & Order was a great show.
Maybe they figured out, too, that it's about relationships. Maybe they actually want to, you know.
Yeah.
So did you get financial advice from Sam Waterston?
I got financial advice from Meatloaf.
That's right. What's the story on this?
On Black Dog, I was just starting, hadn't started the logger yet. And I'm thinking, hey, I want to do this show. And I was talking with Meat. Meatloaf was in Black Dog, and I was his henchman. I was talking to him. Come on a trailer, Rusty. I'll tell you. He'd have a big cigar. Meatloaf has a big personality in real life, too. At least he did on that set. And I said, what am I going to do? I want to do this show. He says, hey, you go to a joint around there. He says, have him pay you like the Rusty Nail. He says, there ain't joints around there. You know the guy. I say, yeah, I know this guy, Bobby Roberts. You go there and tell him you want a certain amount of money, and then you want a certain amount from the ticket. I said, all right, good, cool, Meat. His driver was a woman who bragged that she'd gone out with Merle Haggard. Well, none of us believed it. I love Merle Haggard. Well, she says Merle was playing up past Atlanta after Thanksgiving. We come back from Thanksgiving break. Merle's going to play there. She said, you love Merle, Rusty? I'll get you to meet him. So, okay. the Patrick Swayze's stand-in was this Marine. So he said, come on, Rusty, we're going to see Merle. I said, I don't want to go. He said, yeah, let's go see Merle. We go see Merle. The show's over. He says, we're going to stay around. Miss Kitty, her name was. Miss Kitty's going to come around, and she's going to get us into Merle's bus. I said, she's not. She puts her head, she says, come on, get on Merle's bus. Well, before we could get on Merle's bus, we had to get on his other bus. Who was on his other bus? Bonnie Owen, who had been married to Buck Owens, Merle Haggard, and now Fuzzy Owen, who's Merle Haggard's producer. So I'm on talking with Bonnie Owen, who to me is a big deal, and Fuzzy Owen. I'm telling them about this show I want to do, and they're giving me advice about how to do it, you know? So, yeah, relationships and learning, you know, I don't know a thing.
What happened when you finally met Merle?
Well, after the parade of little bit younger than middle-aged women started coming on and off of the bus. I was talking with on that one Bonnie Owens bus there for like an hour, and then finally, the buses were ready to go. Man, they're in gear, and they took us off and to the foot of the steps of Merle's bus, and he walked down the steps, shook him, and I got to meet Merle Haggard. Man, it's cool. For me, it's cool. Yeah.
So I was thinking maybe the Meatloaf financial advice had maybe something to do with the two out of the three, but
no. It wasn't bad.
So what was the other character you played on Law & Order in the second one?
Randall the Candle, an arsonist.
You're a kidnapper and arsonist.
Yeah, typecast.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something.
You know, when I look at you, I'm thinking, arsonist, kidnapper.
Returning to our less is more in a second, but yeah. So it was one of those interrogation scenes. I was with Sam Waterston, Jerry Orbach again, and Benjamin Bratt. I remember Kerry Lowell. You remember Kerry Lowell, who was married to Richard Gere? I think they just got divorced. Kerry Lowell was the female DA, and I remember being in the room here. And I think this is legal to say on here. Being in the room, and it was like this. It was a window. You know, they're always looking through in a window. And we were in between scenes. And she was just fooling around and flirting. And she lifted up her shirt. Right down to the brassiere. And I'm like, I'm seeing Richard Gere's wife's brassiere. This is big. To be on Law & Order, as you've seen the show, everything is very real. So before they'll even see you to cast you, they send you to a pre-tryout to the casting agent. I don't know who it was. Doesn't really matter to the story now. And they send you there, and they just sit you in a seat, and they say, you ever seen Law & Order? I'm like, yeah, I've seen it a little bit. So everything's real natural. So we want you to just read this thing. We want you to read it natural. So you pick up the thing, and you read it, and it's, I don't know if I'm supposed to read this, but oh, no, I won't read that. Anyway, you know, hello, Susie. I would like to have a tuna sandwich, and I love tuna sandwiches, and I love you, and let's go kill somebody. Okay? If you read it like that, they don't want you. They want you to read it very plain. And I knew I nailed it. I kind of knew what she was saying. So it's all about less is more for what I'm hired for. Anyway, you know. But that's why. And then you try. Law & Order is also unique in that you only have one audition. For most things, you go, you read, you're put on tape. Then the producer, the director, they watch the tape. Then they call you back. Mm-hmm. Then they call you back again. And it whittles down from 100 people to 70 people to 40 people to 30 people to 10 people to 2 people.
Well, they don't have time. I mean, it shows on like, you know, 1,000 times a week. And then
exactly.
So were you on the regular Law & Order, or were you like a special victim?
Dude, I was a regular one, man. So they audition you once and you get the call. You get it. It was really fun to be on that show.
This show that you're doing after Christmas, all new material? You use old material? Is it the same old show 20 years ago? What's the deal?
I'll tell you how it's set up. Set up the first 35, 37, 38 minutes is music. Within the music is also comedy, though. It's not just straight music. Some of it is straight, beautiful, great. The harmonies are great. These guys can sing, Peter Wilder and Patrick Ross. And then I'll do a set of about 30 minutes of comedy and some old comedy. Some new comedy. The Shumlin stuff, the prostate stuff. I have some stuff about where I use that line. You wouldn't worry about what people thought of you if you actually knew how seldom they did. Mm. Then there'll be ad-libs. The second act is a straight whole music bit. I love Dean Martin and the Rat Pack. I've studied them through the years. Mm-hmm. So from this, I've tried to work this into these shows where us guys seem like we're just going off from each other naturally.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very scripted.
Mm-hmm.
But these two guys, Peter Wilder and Patrick Ross, great musicians. They also are good on stage. And mm-hmm. I found that out. The more I found that out, the more I worked into this. So Then I do my sponsors. Can I say my sponsors?
Yeah, sure.
Stowe Kitchen, Bath, and Linens. Dale E. Percy. My first job was driving truck for Dale E. Percy. Relationships. Chip Percy runs it. He and I drummed in school together. Darn Tough, Rick Cabot. I've known him for 25 years.
Probably bought him a lot of chocolate too.
Well, I don't know if I, but he's come to, you know, I know him. We're friends. Harvest Equipment. By the way, they're expanding wicked in the next 5 years. And jobs. Love Darn Tough. All these people. Percy, Stowe, Kitchen, Bath, and Linens. You know what they're doing up there? She's got this little joint next to her place. It's run by school kids. All the profits go to help the school kids out. So, Stowe Hardware.
Wow, child labor and Stowe.
Yeah, child labor. Awesome. Yeah, you're breaking it. You're breaking the story. Stowe Hardware, I've been going there for 40 years. Harvest Equipment sells me my John Deere's. Shaw's General Store. Anne Marie Savila. She owns it. She was in my class. You know what I mean?
The R word again.
What's that?
Relationships
and the Green Mountain Inn and the Whip. And I'm sorry if I missed anybody, but they're not really, they're advertisers. So the 26th, the 27th, the 28th at Stowe Town Hall. The show is called It Started Here. 888-8838 is the number. TheLogger.com. Shaw's General Store, there are tickets. Stowe Kitchen, Bath, and Linens, there are tickets. And you can get online, thelogger.com, PayPal. So it's a great, great show. So the second act is, we have this bit where this fiddle player plays opera. He plays Cajun. He plays musical theater stuff. He plays old-time fiddle stuff. He plays rock and roll. And we go in and out of it really naturally. It's fantastic.
I think there's a state police officer waiting for you here outside for last night's texting.
Well, that, no, wait. That was the 3 years ago one.
Oh.
Yeah, I should have made that clear. But, you know, no, I pull over now.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You have a Bluetooth
and
everything,
too?
Can you
see my nose? Yeah. Did my nose just... No, I honest to God, I do try and pull over. And do it in the parking lots with these things. They're great tools.
Speaking of noses, are the Shumlin jokes and the prostate jokes, are they separate territory here or separate jokes here?
Yes. He's not in on the prostate thing. Shummy. Although I'm sure he's in on the prostate thing. He's, what, 58 years old or something?
All right, so the shows are the 26th, the 27th, the 28th, and then on New Year's Eve on Wednesday, and they're all happening at the town hall in Stowe, and again, that phone number, Rusty, is what?
It's 802-888-8838. Now, you will reserve tickets there. You will pay for them at the door. You won't get them mailed to you. TheLogger.com on PayPal. And Shaw's General Store and Stowe Kitchen, Bath, and Linens. Try not to show up at the door. You can, but it's only holds 180. It's a beautiful place to have a show.
Thanks for coming in.
Oh, I appreciate it, Mark.
Always good to see you.
I appreciate it.
We'll take a quick break here before news. Back after this.
Everyone knows how great it feels to accomplish two things at once. That's the great thing about dual enrollment at the Community College of Vermont. You can earn free college credits to get you started on a degree that also counts towards your high school credit requirements. It's the perfect two-for-one. So if you're a Vermont high school junior or senior, consider dual enrollment at CCV. And if you're not feeling ready for college, no worries. CCV offers intro to college studies.